Could I forget? And then Akos remembered the cuff fixing his wrist to the hospital bed. He decided not to bring it up yet.
Ori, he said. Am I really in Thuva?
Yeah. He closed his eyes. There was a fire in his throat.
Missed you, Ori of Benazit, he said. Or whatever your name is.
Ori laughed. She was crying now.
Then what took you so long?
The next time he woke, he didn't feel quite so numb, and though he ached, certain enough, the sharp agony that had carried him from Voa to Shissa was gone. Syra's lingering gift had been sent away by ice flowers, no doubt. Just thinking Syra's name made his insides twist with fear.
Where was she now?
Had the people who had brought him here rescued her, too? Or had they just left her with Rizek to die? He tasted bile and opened his eyes. A woman stood at the foot of his bed. Dark, curly hair framed her face. Her eyes were wide. There was a little spot at the bottom of one where the pupil bled into her iris. A defect she'd had since birth. His sister, Sisi.
Hello,
she said. Her voice was all softness and light. He'd held the memory of it tight in his mind, like it was the last seed left for planting. It was too easy to cry right now, all laid out and warm as he was.
It's easy,
he croaked, blinking the tears away.
How do you feel?
That, he thought, is a question. He knew she was just asking after his pain, though, so he said,
Fine. I've been worse.
She moved fluidly in sturdy Hesse boots, stopping by the side of the bed and tapping something near his head. The bed moved, tilting up at his waist so he could sit up. He winced. His ribs were hurt. He was so numb he'd almost forgotten. She had been so careful before then, so controlled, that it startled him when she threw herself across him, hands clutching at his shoulder, his side. At first he didn't, couldn't, move. But then he brought his arms around her and held her tight. They'd never hugged much as kids. Except for their dad, they weren't an affectionate family as a rule. But her embrace was brief. She was here. Alive. And they were together again.
I can't believe...
she sighed, and she started to mutter a prayer. He hadn't heard a Thuvazit prayer in a long time. The ones for gratitude were briefest, but he couldn't bring himself to say it with her. There were too many worries crowding his head.
Neither can I,
he said, once she had finished. She pulled away, still holding one of his hands and smiling down at him. No, frowning now, staring at their joined hands. Touching her cheek, where a tear had fallen.
I'm crying, she said. What? I haven't been able to cry since my current gift.
Your current gift keeps you from crying.
You didn't notice it?
She sniffed, wiping her cheeks.
I make people feel at ease. But I also can't seem to do or say anything that makes them feel uneasy, like...
crying, he supplied. That she had a gift with ease didn't surprise him, but the way she described it, it was more like a hand around her throat, squeezing. He couldn't see the gift in that.
Well, mine stops yours.
Stops everybody's, he said.
Handy, sometimes.
Did you go on the sojourn? She said suddenly, holding tight to his hand. He wondered if she was just going to start firing questions at him, now that she could. She added,
Sorry, I wondered when I saw the reports, because you can't swim. I was worried.
He couldn't help it. He laughed.
I was surrounded by a Shotet in close proximity with Rizek Noavec, and you were worried because I can't swim.
He laughed again.
I can worry about two things at once. Several things, in fact,
she said with a bite,
Not a hard one, no. See, he said. Why am I cuffed to this bed? You were wearing Chotet armor when you were dropped off. The Chancellor's instructions are for you to be treated with caution. For some reason, her cheeks went pink. Ori didn't vouch for me. She did. And I did, Sisi said. She didn't explain why she would be in a position to vouch for him with the Chancellor of Thuva, and he didn't ask. Not yet, anyway. But the Chancellor is difficult to win over. She didn't sound critical, but then, Sisi never had. She could sympathize with damn near everybody. Compassion made it hard to maneuver, but she seemed to him to have managed all right in the seasons they had been apart. She looked almost the same, but thinner, with a sharper jaw and cheekbones. Those were from their mom, of course, but the rest of her? Too broad smile, dark brow, delicate nose, was their dad. Last time she had seen him, he had been a child, soft in the face, shorter than all the other kids. Always quiet, always poised to blush. And now, taller than most men, hard-featured and muscled and marked with kills. Did he even look like the same person to her? I'm not going to hurt anyone, he said, in case she wasn't sure. I know. It was easy to see Sisi as this soft, gentle thing. But there was a kind of steel in her eyes, and lines around her mouth, early wrinkles from a life of heartache. She was grown. You're different, he said. You're one to talk, she said. Listen, I wanted to ask you. She gnawed on a fingernail as she found the words. I wanted to ask you about Aija. Aija's hand had been heavy on his shoulder as he steered his brother into the prison. Though Akos whispered his name and begged him for help, food, mercy. He could still feel Aija's hand there. Is he alive? She said weakly. That depends on your definition of alive, he said. Sharp, the way Syra would have said it. I saw a hacked Chotet feed last year where he was at Rizek's side. She paused like she was giving him room to say something. Only he didn't know what to say. And you were at Cyrus, she added, again with that pause. His throat was as dry as dust. Have you seen that feed lately? No. Hard to access. Why? He needed to know if Syra was okay. He needed it like dry earth needed water, scrabbling for whatever drops it could find. But if he was in Thuva, there was no Chotet feed playing on the screens in every home. No way to check if she was dead or alive, until he went back. Which was a given. He would go back. He would help Syra. He would drag Aija home if he had to poison him first. He wasn't finished. Not yet. That's why Issei, the Chancellor, has you cuffed to the bed, Sisi said. If you could just explain why you were with her.
I won't explain.
She looked as shocked by the anger in his voice as he was. I stayed alive. And now this is what I am. Nothing I say to you is going to change what you've already assumed. He was 14 and irritable again. Coming home was like walking backward. I haven't assumed anything, she looked down. It's just that I wanted to warn you. The Chancellor wants to know for sure you aren't, well, a traitor, I suppose. His hands trembled. Know for sure? What does that mean? She was about to answer when the door to the hospital room opened. A Thuvazit soldier came in first, dressed in his indoor uniform, dark red slacks with a dark gray jacket. He stood off to the side, and Ori's twin walked in after him. He knew it wasn't Ori right away, though her eyes were the same and the rest of her was covered in fabric.
a hooded gown, sleeves tight at the wrist, buttoned from waist to throat, long enough to brush the toes of her shoes. The shoes themselves were polished, also black, and snapped on the tile with each step. She stood at the foot of the bed, facing him, hands folded. Clean fingernails, a perfect black line on each of her eyelids to mark the path of her lashes. A veil covered the rest of her face from nose to jaw. Issei Benazit, Chancellor of Thuva. Akos's Hesse manners hadn't taught him to handle something this grand. Somehow he managed to say, "Chancellor, I see you had no trouble distinguishing me from my sister," she said. She had an odd accent, like one from the outer rim of the galaxy, not a fancy one from the planets close to assembly headquarters, as he'd expected. "It's the shoes," he said, his nerves driving him toward honesty. "A Hesse girl would never wear those." Ori, following her in, laughed. Seeing them side by side, it was even more obvious how different they were. Ori was slouching, leaning, her face mobile. Issei was carved from rock. The Chancellor said, "Can I ask why you compromised a layer of protection by revealing your face to him earlier, Ori?" "He's basically my brother," Ori said, firm. "I'm not going to hide my face from him." "Why does it matter?" I said. "You're twins, right? So I know what you both look like." In response, Issei clawed at the corner of her veil with her clean fingernails. When the covering fell away, Akos stared, baldly. Issei's face was crossed with two scars, one that went through her eyebrow and forehead, and the other that went from jaw to nose. Scars just like Kalmev had. Like Akos himself had. They came from sharpened current blades, a rarity since the current's flow was weapon enough. Shotet blades, probably. That explained why she and Ori both covered their faces. Being twins kept everybody confused about who was Chancellor, but with their faces bare, well. "Let's not dwell on pleasantries," Issei said, even sharper than before, if that was possible. "I believe your sister was about to tell you what I can do with my current gift."
"I was,"
Sizi replied.
"Issei, Her Highness, I mean, can summon your memories with a touch. It helps her to verify the testimony of people she feels unable to trust, for whatever reason. There were a lot of memories Akos didn't want summoned. Cyrus' face, with veins of shadow cradling her cheeks, drifted into his mind. He pawed at the back of his head, eyes skipping away from Sizi's.
"It won't work," he said. "Current gifts don't work on me."
"Really?"
Issei said.
"Yeah. Go ahead. Try me."
Issei came closer, shoes snapping. She stopped at his left side, right across from Sizi. Up close he could see how the scars puckered at the edges. Only a few seasons old, if you had to guess. Their color was dark still. She touched his cuffed arm, right where metal met wrist.
"You're right," she said. "I see and feel nothing."
"Guess you're just going to have to take me at my word," he said, a little terse.
"We'll see," was Issei's answer as she went back to the foot of the bed.
"Did Rizek Noavek or anyone associated with him ever ask you for information about me?" she said. "We know that you possessed information, since you saw Ori the day the fates were revealed."
"You did?" Sizi said breathlessly.
"Yes," his voice wavered a little.
"Yes, he asked me."
"And what did you tell him?"
He pulled his knees up to his chest like a kid scared of a storm, and looked out the window. Shissa was bright at the end of the day, every room glowing with lines of light in all different shades, however you liked it. The building next to theirs was purple.
"I knew not to say anything."
He wavered more than before. The memory was inching toward him bit by bit. Cyrus' face, the glass floor,
Ija's hand on him. I know how to bear pain. I'm not weak. I... Even he knew he sounded crazy, babbling this way. Had he said anything in the middle of all that pain? He has... access to Ija's memories of Ori. So it would only have taken him making the connection between Ori and her fate for him to know what you look like. Aliases, origins. So I tried not to say anything. He wants to know which one of you is which. Which one is older. He knows... An oracle told him going after one of you was better than going after the other. So anything that distinguishes you from each other is a danger to you. But he asked again and again, and... I don't think I said anything. But I can't remember. Ori moved impulsively toward him, gripping his ankle hard, squeezing his bones. The pressure helped him hold his head together. If you did tell him something useful, such as where Ori grew up, or who raised her, would he come for us himself? Issei asked, apparently unmoved. No. He tried to steady himself. No. I think he's afraid of you. Rizek never came himself, did he? Not even for his oracle. Not even to kidnap Akos. He didn't want to set foot in Thuva. Issei's eyes had seemed familiar to him when he watched the footage of the twins in Ozok. But the look in them now wasn't something Ori could have mustered. It was downright murderous. He ought to be, Issei said. This conversation isn't over. I want to know everything you know about Rizek Noavec. I will be back. She fastened her veil, and after a tick, Ori did the same. Before she left, though, Ori set her hand on the door and said, Akos, it's all right. It'll be all right. He wasn't all that convinced. Chapter 27 Akos. A dream. His knees met the floor in the underground prison. Syrah's current gift crept over him like sharp worms around the roots of ice flowers. And then, her harsh exhale, and the shadows burst into dark clouds around them. He had never seen them do that before, separate from her skin. Something had changed. She fell sideways after that into a pool of blood, her hands clutched at her stomach, the way his father's had when Voss killed him in front of his children. Her fingers, bent and red, held her insides in. The blood turned to hushflower petals, and he woke up. He was tired of the cuff, or more specifically of his arm at this particular angle, and the metal-on-skin feeling, and this game where he pretended he was trapped when he wasn't. He twisted his hand around to touch the wrist cuff's lock. The current held cuffs like these shut, so if he pressed his skin into the cracks, he could open them. He'd first discovered the talent on the way to Shotet, right before he killed Kalmev Radix. In order to kill Kalmev Radix. The cuff clicked as it came undone. He yanked the needle out of his other arm and got up. His body ached, but he was steady enough, so he walked to the window, watching the Thuvazit floater lights zipping past. Lurid pink and vibrant red and gray-green, they wrapped around the squat ships like belts, not bright enough to light the way, just enough to show they were there. He stood there for a long time, as night got deeper and deeper and traffic died down and Shissa itself went to sleep. Then a dark shape passed over the purple glow of the building across from the hospital. Another one drifted above the iceflower fields far below. A third rushed past the hospital itself, making the glass shudder under his hands. He recognized the patched-together metals. The Shotet ships were filling Shissa like a cup. An alarm screeched in the corner of the room, and just a tick later the door opened, Issei Benazit, shoes shining, tossed a canvas bag on the floor at his feet. Good to know our handcuffs don't work on you, she said. Come on, you're going to get me out of here.
He didn't budge. The bag bulged in weird places from stiff armor. His, he assumed. It probably held his weapons and poisons, too. If whoever had dumped him in Shissa like a sack of trash had bothered to outfit him with one thing, they had probably thrown in the whole lot.
You know, I'd really like to be the kind of person people just listen to, Issei said, her formal manner falling away in her frustration. You think I should carry around a big stick or something?
He bent over the canvas bag and pulled his armor over his head. With one hand, he pulled the tough straps tight over his ribs, and with the other, he sorted through the bag for his knife. It was the one Syra had given him on the street during the festival. He'd given it back to her once, in apology, but she had left it on the table on the sojourn ship before they left, and he had taken it with him.
My sister, he said.
Right here, Sizi spoke from the hallway.
You're so tall, Akos.
Issei grabbed his arm. He let her move him around like a puppet. For someone who asked him to get her out, she sure was acting like she was getting him out. When they were in the hallway, all the lights went off at once, leaving just some strips of emergency light on the left edge of the tile. Issei's hand was tight as she steered him down the hallway and around the corner. From deep in the building, he heard screams. He reached back for Sizi's hand, and they all started to run, skidding around a corner toward the emergency exit. But at the end of the hallway were two dark figures dressed in Shotet armor. His steps faltered. He wrenched his arm from Issei's grasp and stepped back into the shadows.
Akos!
Sizi sounded horrified. Around the corner, Issei drew the weapon at her hip, current blade, not sharp, but set to a deadly density. The soldiers were moving toward her, slow, like you moved when you didn't want to startle an animal.
Where do you think you are going? One of them said in Shotet, of course. He likely couldn't speak any other languages.
He was shorter than Issei and sturdy, to put it kindly. His tongue flicked out to his wet lips, which were swollen from the cold. Shotet soldiers had never been this far north before, as far as Akos could remember. They probably weren't ready for the temperature drop.
I am leaving this hospital,
Issei said in clumsy Shotet. Both soldiers laughed. The second one was younger, his voice cracking.
Nice accent, the older one said. Where did you learn our language? From Brim Planet scum?
Issei lunged and Akos couldn't see much, but he heard her moan when she got hit. That was when he stood, best knife in hand, armor fastened tight.
Stop, he said, walking around the corner again. What do you want? The older soldier said.
Akos moved into the light.
I want you to leave her to me. Now.
When neither of the soldiers budged, he said,
I am a steward of the family Novak.
It was technically true and technically a lie. No one had ever given him a title, after all.
I was sent here by Rizek Novak to collect her. That will be much more challenging if I let you kill her.
Everybody went still, even Akos. They would have a clear shot at the emergency stairs. And all they had to do was get past these two obstacles. The older Shotet ran his tongue over his lips again.
And what if I kill you and complete your mission for you? How well will I be rewarded by the sovereign of Shotet?
Don't... The younger soldier was wide-eyed.
I recognize him.
The older Shotet swiped with his blade, but he was big and slow, obviously low-ranking. Akos jumped back, hunching to get his gut out of harm's way. When he swung his own knife, he struck only armor, sending sparks flying. But his other hand, his right hand, was already drawing another knife from the side of his boot. That one found flesh. The soldier fell against him, spilling warm blood on his hands. Akos bore his weight, stunned, not by what he had done, but by the ease with which he had done it.
You have a choice, he said to the younger soldier who was left. His voice was ragged and not quite his own. Stay and die. Run and live. The young soldier with the squeaky laugh bolted down the hallway. He almost slipped as he turned the corner. Sisi was shaking, eyes shining from unshed tears, and Issei was pointing her knife at him. He lowered the soldier to the ground. Don't throw up, he told himself. Don't throw up.
Steward of the family Noavik, Issei said.
Not exactly, he said.
I still don't trust you,
she said, but she put her knife down. Let's go. They hustled to the roof and ran into the wild, frozen air. By the time they made it to the floater, a black one close to the edge of the landing pad, his teeth were chattering. The door opened at Sisi's touch, and they climbed in. The floater's controls lit up when Sisi sat in the driver's seat. The night vision screen expanding in front of her in green, and the nav system glowing with a welcome. She reached under the control board and switched off the floater's outer lights, then typed in their home address and set the ship on auto-nav, high speed. It lifted from the landing pad and jerked forward, throwing Akos against the control panel. He'd forgotten to buckle himself in. He twisted around to watch Shissa shrink behind them. Every building was lit up a different color. Purple for the library, yellow for the hospital, green for the grocery. They hung, impossibly, like suspended raindrops. He watched them as the floater sped away, until the buildings were just a cluster of lights. When everything was near dark, he turned back to Sisi.
You,
she gulped. Whatever it was she wanted to say, she couldn't say it. Current gift be damned. He reached for her, setting a clean finger. The others were red and sticky, on her arm. The words came spilling out.
You killed him.
He cycled through a few different responses in his mind, ranging from, and he wasn't the first, to, I'm sorry. None of them seemed right. He didn't want her to hate him, but he didn't want her to think he had come away from Shotet innocent. He didn't want to talk about it, but he didn't want to lie. He saved us both, Issei said sharply, as she switched on a news scroll. A little holoscreen popped up above the auto-nav map, and Akos read the headlines as they spun in a circle. Shotet invasion begins in Shissa 2 hours after sunset. Shotet invaders witnessed at Shissa Hospital. 8 Thuvazit deaths reported. I sent Orieva away right after we left your room, Issei said. She should have made it out all right. I can't send her a message now. It could be intercepted. He held his hands against his legs, wishing like hell that he could wash them. A newsbreak appeared on the holoscreen when they descended into Hessa, a few hours before dawn. Shissa police reporting 2 Thuvazit captives taken by Shotet. Footage from the invasion shows a woman dragged from Shissa Hospital by Shotet soldiers. Preliminary identification efforts suggest the woman is either Issei or Orieva Benazit. Something big and fierce shredded his insides. Orieva Benazit. Ori. Gone. He tried not to look at Issei, to give her a tick to react on her own. But there wasn't much to watch. Sisi's hand snaked out to touch Issei's, but Issei just flicked a switch to turn the news feed off and stared out the window. Well, Issei said at last, I'll just have to go get her then.
Chapter 28 Akos.
When they got to Hessa, the floater moved in a wide arc around the mountain and drifted toward the feather grass. It sank to the ground in front of his family's house, crushing stems and tufts under it. The blood had dried on Akos's hands. Issei got out of the floater first, and Sisi followed. When Akos jumped out, the doors closed behind him. The feather grass was flattened in a circle around it. Sisi led the way to the house, which was good,
because Akos didn't have the strength. All the windows were dark reminders of the last time he'd been there. When CZ opened the door and the smell of spices and chopped salt fruit wafted over him, he half expected his dad's body to be on the floor in the living room, soaked through. Akos paused, breathed, kept walking. He skimmed the wood paneling with his knuckles on the way to the kitchen, past the wall where all the family pictures used to hang, blank now. The living room wasn't at all the same. It was more a study, with two desks and bookcases, and not a squashy cushion in sight. But the kitchen, with its scraped-up table and rough-hewn bench, was the same. CZ shook the chandelier over the kitchen table to light the burnstones. Their light was still tinted red. "Where's Mom?" he said, as an image of her popped into his mind. She was standing on a creaky stool, dusting the chandelier with hush flower. "Oracle meeting," CZ said. "They meet all the time now. It'll take her a few days." Days would be too late. He would be long gone by then. The desire to wash his hands became a need. He went to the sink. A lump of homemade soap sat near the faucet, with little purity petals pressed into it to pretty it up. He worked it into a lather, then rinsed his hands once, twice, three times, dragged his fingernails along the lines in his palm, scrubbed beneath them. By the time he was done, his palms were bright pink and CZ was setting out mugs for tea. He hesitated with his hand over the knife drawer. He wanted to mark the loss of the Shotet soldier on his arm. There was a vial of feathergrass extract beside the other vials he carried to stain the wound. But had he really just let something so Shotet become an instinct? Clean hands, clean blade, new mark? He closed his eyes like darkness was all he needed to clear his head. Somewhere out there, the nameless soldier he had killed had some family, some friends, who were counting on his loss to be recorded. Akos knew, though it disturbed him to know, that he wasn't about to pretend the death hadn't happened. So he took out a carving knife and shoved it into the furnace flames, turning the blade to sterilize it. Crouched there by the heat, he carved a straight line into his arm with the hot blade, next to the other marks. Then he poured feathergrass extract on the tines of a fork and dragged it in a straight line down the cut. It was clumsy, but it would have to do. Then he sat right there on the floor, holding his head, writing out the pain. Blood ran down his arm and pooled in the crook of his elbow. "The invaders might come to Hesse," Ise said. "Looking for me. We should leave as soon as possible and find Ori." "We," he said. "I'm not taking the Chancellor of Thuva to Rezek Noavek. Not with my fate as it is. That would really make me a traitor." She eyed his marked arm. "If you aren't already." "Oh, shut up," he snapped. She raised her eyebrows, but he went on. "You think you know exactly how I'll meet my fate? You think you know what it means better than I do? You claim to be loyal to Thuva, but you tell its chancellor to shut up." There was a note of humor in her voice. "No. I told the woman in my kitchen asking for one hell of a favor to shut up," he said. "I would never disrespect my chancellor that way, Your Highness." She leaned toward him. "Then take the woman in your kitchen to Shotet." Leaned back. "I'm not an idiot. I know I'll need your help to get me there." "You don't trust me?" "Again, not an idiot," she said. "You help me get my sister out, and I'll help you get your brother out. No guarantees, of course." Akos almost swore. Why was it, he wondered, that everyone seemed to know exactly what to offer him to make him agree to things? Not that he was convinced she could help him, but he had been teetering on the edge of agreeing anyway. "Akos," Ise said, and the use of his name, without malice, startled him a little. If someone told you that you couldn't go save your brother, that your life was too important to risk for theirs, would you listen? Her face was washed out and dotted with sweat, her cheek red from where the soldier had hit her. She didn't look much like a chancellor. The scars on her face said something different about her, too, that she, like Syra, knew what she was risking when she risked her life.
All right, he said. I'll help you.
There was a loud crack as Ceezy brought her mug down hard on the table, splashing hot tea over her hand. She grimaced, wiping her hand on her shirt and thrusting it out for him to take. Issei looked confused, but Akos understood. Ceezy had something to say, and much as he was afraid to hear it, he couldn't very well say no. He clasped her hand.
I hope you both realize that I'm coming with you, she said hotly.
No, he said. You can't be in that kind of danger. Absolutely not.
You don't want me to be in danger?
Her voice was rougher than it ever had been before. She was rigid as a crossbeam.
How do you think I feel about you going back there? This family has been through enough uncertainty, enough loss. She was scowling.
Issei looked like she had just been smacked, and no wonder. She had probably never seen Ceezy like this, free to say whatever she wanted, free to cry and yell and make everyone uncomfortable.
If we all get killed in Shotet, we'll get killed together. But don't talk about death that way, like it's nothing. I don't think you get it.
A tremor went through her arm, her hand, her voice. Her eyes found his, and he focused on the spot on her iris, the place where the pupil broke open. After you were taken, and Mom came back, she was insensible. So I dragged Dad's body out to the field to burn. I cleaned up the living room. He couldn't imagine the horror of scrubbing your own father's blood out of the floor. Better to set the whole house on fire. Better to leave and never come back.
Don't you dare tell me I don't know what death is, she said.
I know. Alarmed, he lifted a hand to her cheek, pressed her face into his shoulder. Her curly hair itched his chin.
Fine, was all he said. It was agreement enough.
They agreed to sleep for a few hours before they left, and Akos went upstairs alone. Without thinking, he skipped the sixth step, some part of him remembering that it groaned louder than the others. The hallway upstairs was a little crooked. It listed to the right just after the bathroom. The curve wrong somehow. The room he'd shared with Aija was at the end. He opened the door with his fingertips. The sheets on Aija's bed were curled like they were around a still-sleeping body, and there was a pair of dirty socks in the corner, stained brown at the heels from his shoes. On Akos's side of the room, the sheets were taut around the mattress, a pillow wedged between bed and wall. Akos had never been able to last long with a pillow. Through the big round window, he saw feather grass rippling in the dark, and stars. He held his pillow in his lap when he sat. The pair of shoes lined up with the bed frame were so much smaller than the pair he was wearing that he smiled, and then cried, shoving his face in the pillow to stifle himself. It wasn't happening. He wasn't here. He wasn't about to leave home when he'd only just found it again. The tears subsided eventually, and he fell asleep with his shoes still on. A while later, when he woke, he stood under the spray in the hall bathroom for just a little longer than usual, hoping it would relax him. No use. When he got out, though, there was a stack of clothes just outside the door, his dad's old clothes. The shirt was too loose through the shoulders and waist, but tight across the chest. He and Alsa were completely different shapes. The pants were long enough, but just barely, tucked into the top of Akasa's boots. When he took his towel back to the bathroom to hang it, that was what his mom would return to, a wet towel and rumpled sheets and no children. Issei was there, already dressed in some of his mom's clothes, the black pants bunched around her waist under the belt. She prodded one of her scars in a mirror and met his eyes. "If you try to say something meaningful and profound about scars, I'll punch you in the head," she said. He shrugged and turned his left arm so the kill marks faced her. "I guarantee you, yours aren't as ugly as mine. At least you chose yours." Well, she had a point. "How did you come to be marked by a Shotet blade?" he said. He'd heard some of the soldiers trading scar stories before. Not kill mark stories, but other scars. A white line on a kneecap from a childhood accident, a swipe from a kitchen knife during an invasion of Hessa, a drunken accident involving a head and a doorframe. They'd all been in stitches over each other's stories. That wasn't going to happen now, he was sure. "The scavenge isn't always as peaceful as they might have you believe," Issei said. "During the last one, my ship had to land on Othir for repairs, and while we were there, one of the crew got really sick. While we were parked at the hospital, we were attacked by Shotet soldiers who were raiding the medicine stores. One of them cut my face and left me for dead." "I'm sorry," he said automatically. For some reason, he wanted to tell her about where Othirian medical aid went, to Rizek's supporters only, and how few people knew about it. But it really wasn't a good time to explain Shotet to her. Especially not if she would think he was excusing the soldier for stealing medicine and scarring her face. "I'm not sorry." Issei seized the soap bar next to the sink like she wanted to break it in half, and started washing her hands. "Hard to forget who your enemies are when you have scars like mine." She cleared her throat. "Hope you don't mind. I borrowed some of your mother's clothes." "I'm wearing a dead man's underwear," he said. "Why would I mind?" She smiled a little, which Akos felt was progress enough. None of them wanted to wait any longer than they had to, Akos in particular. He knew the more time he spent there, the harder it would be to leave. Better, he thought, to reopen the wound fast, get it over with, so he could bandage it up again. They packed supplies, food, clothes, and ice flowers, and piled into the spare floater. It had just enough fuel in it to get them across the feather grass, and that was all they needed. At Cece's touch, it lifted off the ground, and Akko set the auto-nav for a spot in what looked like the middle of nowhere. They would go to Jorek's house first. It was the only relatively safe place he knew outside of Voa. As they flew, he watched the feather grass below them, showing the wind's pattern as it tilted and turned. "What do the Shotet say about the feather grass?" Issei said suddenly. "I mean, we say early Thuvazit settlers planted it to keep the Shotet at bay, but obviously they have a different perspective, right?" "The Shotet say they planted it," Akko said, "to keep out Thuvazit outsiders. But it's native to Agra." "I can still hear them from up here," Cece said. "The voices in the grasses." "Whose voices?" The sharpness left Issei's voice when she spoke to Cece. "My father's, mostly," Cece said. "I hear my mother," Issei said. "Wonder if we only hear the dead. How long has it been since she died?" "Couple seasons. Same time I got cut." Issei had lapsed into some other, more casual diction. Even her posture had changed, spine bent. They kept talking, and Akko stayed quiet, his thoughts drifting back to Syra. If she had died, he was sure he would have felt it now, like something stabbing him right through the sternum. It wasn't possible to lose a friend like her without knowing, was it? Though the current didn't flow through him, her life force surely did. She had kept him alive for too long,
Maybe if he held on tight enough now, he could do the same for her, from far away. In late afternoon, when the sun was swollen with what was left of the day, they started to run out of fuel. The floater shuddered. Under them the feather grass was thinning, and between it there was low, gray-brown grass that moved like hair in the wind. Ceezy guided the ship to a place near some wildflowers. It got frosty here, closer to the equator, but warm smells of air came from the sea and filled the valley of Voa. Other kinds of plants could grow, not just ice flowers. They climbed out and started walking. Along the horizon was the purple swell of the current stream, a little cluster of buildings, and the glint of Chotet ships. Jorek had told him how to get to his family's house, but the last time Akos had been here was right after he had killed Kalmev Radix, and Vas and the others had just beaten the snot out of him, so he didn't remember it too well. The land was so flat there weren't many places for a small village to hide. Lucky. He heard shifting in the grass ahead of him, and between stalks he saw something dark and massive. He grabbed Issei's hand on his left and Ceezy's on his right, holding them both still. Up ahead, the creature was gliding. The clicking of its pincers came from all directions. It was big, as wide as he was tall easily, and its body was covered with dark blue plates. It had more legs than he could count, and he could see its head only because of the teeth glistening in its wide, curved mouth. They were as long as his fingers. An armored one. His face was Izzet's from its hard-plated side. It exhaled, like sighing, and its eyes, beady and black, almost hidden under a plate, closed. Beside him, Ceezy shuddered with fear. "The current drives armored ones into mad rages," he whispered right against the creature, which had gone to sleep, much as it defied logic. He took a slow step back. "That's why they attack people, because we're such good channels for the current." His hands squeaked against theirs. His palms were sweaty. "But," Issei said, sounding strained, "you don't channel the current, so..."
"So they hardly know I'm there," he replied. "Come on."
He led the way away from the sleepy animal, checking over his shoulder to make sure it wasn't following. It stayed put.
"I guess we know how you earned your armor," Issei said.
"That's where the armor comes from?"
Ceezy said.
"I thought all that stuff about slaying beasts was just stupid Thuvazit rumor."
"It's not rumor," he said. "It's not really some story of triumph in my case. It fell asleep, and I killed it. I felt so bad about it afterward I marked it on my arm."
"Why did you do it?" Issei said.
"If you didn't want to, I mean."
"I wanted armor," he said. "Not every Chotet earns that kind of armor, so it's a kind of status symbol. I wanted them to see me as an equal, and shut up about me having thin Thuvazit skin."
Ceezy snorted. "They clearly have never weathered a Hesse winter." He led them toward the distant buildings, through patches of wildflowers so fragile they came apart under his boots.
"So are you going to tell us where we're going? Or do you expect us to just march right into those buildings up ahead?"
Issei said, once they were close enough to see what the houses were made of. Blue-gray stone with small glass windows stained in all different colors. It was just a few buildings, hardly enough to be called a village. With the setting sun glinting off the glass, and the wildflowers growing right up against the stone, the place was downright pretty. He was taking a chance coming here. But then, no matter what he did, they were in trouble. So it was as good an option as any. He was twitchy with nerves. These houses would be connected to the Chotet news feed. They would know what happened to Syra here. He kept his left hand up by his right shoulder as he walked, so he could draw his knife if he needed to. He didn't know what waited for them behind those bright windows.
He drew his weapon when he saw a flash of movement, one of the doors opening. A small, sly-looking woman stepped out, her hands dripping water. She was holding a cloth. He knew her. Aure Kuzar, the late Suzao's wife and Jorak's mother. Well, at least they were in the right place.
Hello,
Aure said. Her voice was lower than he'd expected. He'd only ever seen her once, as he walked out of the amphitheater after killing her husband. Her hand had been clutched in Jorak's.
Hello, he replied. I know who you are, Arcos, she said. My name is Aure, but I'm sure you already know that too.
No point in denying it, he nodded.
Why don't you come inside? She said. Your friends can come, too, as long as they don't cause trouble.
Issei arched an eyebrow at him as she took the lead, climbing the steps. Her hands hovered over her legs, moving to grasp fabric that wasn't there to hold. She was used to fine clothing, probably, and still moved like an upper-class woman now, head high and shoulders back. She'd never weathered a Hesse winter, either, but there were harder things to weather. They followed Aure down a narrow, creaky staircase to a kitchen. The floors were blue tile, the stain uneven, and the white paint flaked off the walls. But it was warm, and there was a big, steady table with all the chairs pushed back, like there had been a lot of people there not long ago. A screen played the news feed on the far wall. It was jarring to see the synthetic light buried in the flaky wall, new and old married, as they were all over Chotet.
I sent a signal to Jorak, so he should return soon, Aure said. Do your friends speak Chotet?
One of us, Issei said. I only learned a few seasons ago, so
go slowly. No, we can carry on in Thuvazit,
Aure said. Her Thuvazit was stilted, but understandable.
This is my sister Sisi, he said, gesturing to Sisi. And my friend Bata,
Issei said easily.
A pleasure to meet you both,
Aure said.
I have to confess, Arcos, I am a little offended you didn't accept my gift to you.
The ring? She was looking at his hands, which were shaking a little.
Oh, he said.
He stuck a thumb under the collar of his shirt and brought the chain out. From the end dangled the ring she'd sent him through her son. Really, he'd wanted to toss it in the garbage rather than wear it. Suzao's death wasn't something he wanted to remind himself of, but it was something he needed to remind himself of. Aure nodded her approval.
How do you two know each other?
Sisi asked. He wondered if her softened voice was intended to make this situation comfortable. Not worth the effort, he thought.
That, Aure said, is a story for another time.
Arcos couldn't stand it anymore. I don't want to be rude, he said, but I need to know about Syra. Aure folded her hands over her stomach.
What about Miss Novik?
Is she... He couldn't quite say the word.
She is alive.
He closed his eyes, just for a tick, letting himself think about her again. She was lively in his memories. Fighting in the training room like war was a dance, searching windows into black space like they were paintings. She made ugly things beautiful, somehow, and he would never understand it. But she was alive.
I wouldn't celebrate just yet,
spoke a voice from behind him. He turned to see a slight girl with white blonde hair and a pink eye patch over one eye. He recognized her from the sojourn ship, but didn't remember her name. Jorak was behind her, his mop of curly hair falling in his eyes, the shadow of a beard along his jaw.
Arcos, he said. What are you...
He trailed off as he spotted Sisi and Ise.
Sisi, Bata, Akko said. This is Jorik, and...
Tekka, the familiar girl said.
That was right. She was the daughter of that renegade who had been executed before the sojourn. Syra had gone over to talk to her before they set out for Pitha.
Right, Akko said. Well, Sisi is my sister, and Bada is my... friend, from Thuva. Sisi doesn't speak Shotet.
He waited a beat.
What did you mean by... don't celebrate?
Tekka sat in one of the empty chairs. Slung her body across it, really, her knees spread wide and her arm dangling over the back of the chair.
By the look of it, little Noavek won't last much longer, she said. We're trying to figure out a way to break her loose. Now that you've come here, stupid move, I should add, maybe you can help us.
Break her loose, Akos turned to Jorak. Why would you want to do that?
Jorek hoisted himself onto the counter across from Sisi. He flashed a smile at her, his eyes going sleepy the way people's often did when they were around his sister. Akos recognized then the gift of it. Not just the force that strangled Sisi, kept her from crying, but also one that gave her power over other people.
Well, Jorek said, this is a renegade stronghold, as you may have gathered.
Akos hadn't really thought about it. Jorik seemed to know things other people didn't, but that didn't mean he was a renegade. And Tekka was missing an eye, which meant she was no friend of Rizek's, but that wasn't a guarantee either.
So, Akos said.
Well, Jorik looked confused.
She didn't tell you.
Tell me what?
Akos demanded.
Syra was working with us, Tekka said. During the attack on the Sojourn ship, I was supposed to take her out, take out Rizek's scores while announcing his fate on the intercom, see?
Don't call her that, Akos said. He felt Ise's eyes on him and his cheeks went hot.
Yeah, yeah, Tekka waved him off. Well, she bested me, and she let me go, and then she found me, requested a meeting. She offered to give us whatever we wanted, information, help, whatever, if we did something for her in exchange. Get you out of Shotet.
Tekka looked at Jorak.
That's why she didn't tell him. Because she wanted to get him out. But he wouldn't leave without his brother.
Jorak clicked his tongue. Those weeks after Rizek had threatened him, after Syra tortured Zosita and kept up appearances on Pitha, she had let him think she was just doing whatever Rizek said. Let Akos believe the worst of her. And all that time she was out working with renegades, giving whatever she could to get him out. It was like she had become someone new and he hadn't even noticed. She was helping us assassinate Rizek when she got caught. She got us out, but it was too late for her, Tekka said. But we followed through on our end. Snuck back in, and she was gone. We don't know where they put her, but you were there, incapacitated, locked up in your room again. Half-starved, might I add. So we got you out. We thought you might be useful in keeping her on our side. I also wanted to help you, Jorak supplied.
Yeah, you're a hero, noted, Tekka said.
Why? Akko shook his head. Why would Syra do this?
You know why, Tekka said. What's the only thing more important to her than her fear of her brother?
When he didn't answer, she sighed, exasperated clearly.
You, of course, have that singular honor.
Ise and Sisi were staring, one with suspicion and the other confusion. He didn't even know how to start explaining it. Syra Noavek was a name every Thuvazit knew, a monster story they told to scare each other. What did you say when you found out the monster wasn't worthy of the name?
Nothing.
You said nothing.
What did Rizek do to her?
He said darkly.
Show him, Tekka said.